From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The magnitude of the disaster in countries along the Indian Ocean is beginning to come into focus. We now know more than 55,000 people died on Sunday when a huge underwater earthquake sent a tsunami racing from Indonesia to the Horn of Africa. Even more fatalities are expected as search crews reach remote areas and as disease starts to threaten the survivors.
Today, the government of Indonesia reported a dramatic increase in the number of dead there. It says the total now stands at more than 27,000, including 10,000 in one town in the province of Aceh. We'll hear from Aceh's capital in just a minute. In Sri Lanka, officials say more than 18,000 have been killed, and there are thousands more fatalities in India, Thailand, Malaysia, Somalia, and elsewhere.
Relief agencies have begun one of the largest humanitarian efforts in history. The United Nations says it is facing an unprecedented challenge coordinating aid distribution in more than 10 countries.
Sean Donnan is a correspondent for the Financial Times. He's in Indonesia, in the provincial capital Banda Aceh. He says that Aceh province was hit both by the earthquake and the tsunami, a double tragedy with thousands of lives lost.
We spent some time wandering around the streets here this afternoon, and there are still loaded bodies in the streets. There's mud and debris in the streets. Big 75-foot fishing boats that have been carried hundreds of yards inshore. It's just a horrific scene in terms of the bodies that are there. There are whole residential neighborhoods of Banda Aceh that have just been completely leveled, completely flattened. We've also got on the outskirts of town, they have been digging some mass graves and putting up to 1,000 bodies at a time. It's been almost 3 days now that these bodies have been sitting in the tropical heat.
How big a city is Banda Aceh, and is there any sense of how much of the population may have been killed in this disaster?
Banda Aceh is a city of about 100,000 people. At this point, it's very difficult to know how much of the population has survived and how much hasn't. We went to one part of town, and people were telling us there that they thought only 20% of their neighbors had survived.
There are reports from the town a little bit further down the western coast of Aceh there, from the town of Mulebo, that there could possibly be 10,000 dead in that town alone.
That's the town. We're being told it's one of the towns that they haven't been able to reach. They were able to fly over it today. They saw bodies from the air on the beaches and in the streets, but they haven't really been able to get in touch with the town. It's really hard to know what has happened on that western coast. Up to 1 million people live along this coast. We're just not getting news out of there.
Where you are there in Banda Aceh, are you able to tell what damage was caused by the earthquake and then what damage was caused by the tsunami itself?
Yeah. Some buildings, including one of the big shopping centers in town here, were damaged really heavily by the earthquake. And it's clear earthquake damage. These are buildings that look like they've almost been flattened from above, as if someone has just taken a powerful hand and pushed them to the ground. And then you have this what clearly is the leftover of the tidal waves, thousands of homes that have been just ripped from their foundations and just poured through a couple of streets of Banda Aceh and whole neighborhoods, ripping whole neighborhoods apart. So there's two very distinct types of damage. It's pretty clear, though, that if you had the earthquake alone, that the death toll here would have been much lower than what we're talking about now.
And how far apart were those two events? Have you been able to tell?
It seems to be, from what we get from witnesses, it seems to be a matter of there was an earthquake, and the next 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, people were going outside, worried that the buildings would collapse. And at that point, all of a sudden, people started screaming, "The water is coming, the water is coming." And that's something we heard over and over again from people, is that they had heard people yelling this warning. It really is a horrific scene, and you just see cars that are just flung up against shops, back three and four high, big trucks that have just been carried across town. It really is a horrific scene, but the main horror here, it clearly was the tidal wave.
Apart from the thousands and thousands of dead, there have got to be many, many thousands of severely wounded people. What's happening with them?
The hospital here is overloaded. We talked to one woman today whose husband had been vomiting blood for the last few days, and she hadn't been able to get any help for him and was incredibly worried about him. And that came after This was a man who had been in a tree and had been holding their 9-year-old son and had had their 9-year-old son ripped out of their ripped out of his hands while he was in this tree trying to save their lives. It's the medical care here is very basic. Food is incredibly short supply. Gasoline is an incredibly short supply. Drinking water is an incredibly short supply. We're sitting at the governor's house in Aceh now, which has become sort of a coordination center, and there are just thousands of people wandering through town all through today. There were just thousands and thousands of people wandering through town, just dazed, whole families just clearly looking for somewhere to stay. There are some refugee camps that have been set up, but it's clear that the response here is happening incredibly slowly, achingly slowly, and that it's just not fast enough to keep up with the potential disaster here. About the closest that we've seen to some kind of concerted aid effort is military trucks. We got to keep in mind that Aceh is a conflict zone, that they've been trying to quash a separatist uprising that's been running for about 25 years. And so you see military trucks running through town, literally throwing drinking water from the trucks to the crowds. But they're small canisters. I mean, it's maybe, you know, it's 12 ounces of drinking water. This is not the kind of stuff that will get you through even a day here in the tropical heat that we're seeing.
And one complication is that because of this secessionist movement and emergency rule there, that there hasn't been a humanitarian presence in Aceh. It's been effectively sealed off up until now.
I'm based in Jakarta, and we've for the last few years have been trying very hard to get up here under incredibly tight restrictions. They've loosened some of those restrictions on journalists. What is unclear so far is whether they will allow international aid organizations to come and do their work on the ground here. And that's clearly what's needed. There's going to be an incredible suspicion of any outside help in Aceh.
Financial Times correspondent Sean Donnan speaking with us from Banda Aceh in Indonesia.